This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition Spider-Man Far From Home. My fanboy special edition Spider-Man Far From Home. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with the internet's Paul Montgomery.
Hey, everybody.
And we're talking about Spider-Man Far From Home, the surprise last film from Marvel Studios' third wave. Is that what they're calling
it? That's right, yeah.
Avengers really did feel like that should have been the end of the wave. We have a prologue here, I think, in Spider-Man Far From Home.
Or an epilogue, yeah.
Epilogue is what I meant.
But it also feels like a prologue to the next phase. So I would call it a transitional film.
Yeah. Produced by Sony, and that's probably why this film exists at all. I'm sure Marvel wanted to end on Avengers. Directed by John Watts, who did Homecoming. Noted tiki enthusiast. My buddy met him at a tiki bar and they had a conversation about Spider-Man, which made sense because there's a lot of tiki references in this movie. And written by Chris McKenna, Eric Summers, of course, starring Tom Holland as Peter Parker Spider-Man, Samuel Jackson as Nick Fury, and Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio. The rest of your cast, Marissa Tomei, May Parker, John Favreau is a big presence, Happy Hogan, Zendaya as MJ, and then we'll talk about the rest of the supporting cast in a bit. As Peter Parker and his science, I guess class or club, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Go on a crazy expensive European vacation for a Queens public school.
Oh, yeah. It's like the joke of like a summer rental movie where they're staying at this terrible, it's not a hospice, but it's like the place that they booked to stay overnight in Venice, at least, is
sinking.
It's sinking. It's literally sinking.
But even then, I mean, God, I went to Queens Public High School, and I can't imagine at any point we would have gone to Venice, let alone also Paris and wherever else they were planning on going on their trip before Nick Fury hijacked it. But that's not important. The important thing is Spider-Man, after the events of Avengers Endgame, is now in Europe. Spoiler warning, of course, now that we've mentioned things, but if you haven't seen the movie, pause and come back as Paul and I jump in to talk about the film. I thought this was utterly delightful, Paul.
I thought this was cute as hell.
I think Tom Holland has now made me forget all other Spider-Men.
Interesting, okay.
Live-action Spider-Man is perfect as Peter Parker, and I love this little group of characters. I think everyone in this film is winning.
Yeah. They've created a great ensemble, starting with the returning students. And when they first introduced the concept of this movie, I was like, okay, so I was excited because, okay, all the kids like Ned and Zendaya and everybody like at MJ are going to be going to Europe. And that sounds like a really great framework for this movie because I love those characters. They're so much fun. But then also I was like, wait a minute. Mr. Harrington is probably going to be their chaperone. Yes. I love Martin Starr in these movies.
He's the best as the well-meaning slightly inept teacher who is, his life is constantly falling apart around him. He's great. J.B. Smoove as his counterpart is great too.
I imagine it was like an ad lib when he tells that story about his wife pretending to blip to just to get away from him, which is such a weird, complex joke that you can only tell in this weird, convoluted universe that Endgame has now created.
Right, you needed two other films to make that joke work.
Yeah.
That's one of the main subplots, is that this is post everyone returning, and we get a little comedic thing in the beginning about that. And it's sort of an explainer. I'm really not even quite sure I've wrapped my brain around how it all works, but
right,
all the people came back in what they're calling the blip, in which when Thanos made them all disappear. And there's a really funny bit where the band returns and gets run over by the basketball team because they blip back into the court.
Mm-hmm.
Were they saying that everyone in the blip aged? I guess they went away at a certain age, but then they aged in the blip and came back older. Is that what they said? That's why the handsome guy came back.
Yeah, I was confused about that. Because I was like, shouldn't it be that he didn't blip?
Yeah, it should have stayed the same age.
And then he would have, yeah. So I don't know. That's a little confusing. They did answer one of my big questions, though, which is, it goes with the basketball team thing. But Aunt May is like, she's leading up this this charity for displaced people from the blip.
Mm-hmm.
Which it was like, if people disappeared, like for 5 years, like new people are living in their homes,
right,
and like their spouses are.
That was the joke, right? So she came back, and they thought she was a ghost,
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah. And so shouldn't Peter be way older than two, because he was gone?
Right. I don't know.
It falls apart a little bit when you think too hard about it.
And it's like sort of very neat that both Aunt May and Peter and like all of his close friends blipped.
Right.
Like it's like there's no sort of mix of like Flash didn't not blip.
It's
very convenient that everybody in his circle is sort of like they blipped, so they have the same status quo.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, you know, Avengers took the films 5 years in the future, so technically this film took place in like 2023.
Right. Yeah.
5 years from when the blip happened, and it's a needless complication, which you really don't really get caught up on, because it's not really that important ultimately.
Right. I think that they and they had advance warning on how Endgame was going to end, and mm-hmm. and even the events of Infinity War. So it doesn't feel like, oh, they tacked on this stuff.
No,
like,
it's fully
ingrained. Got saddled with this. It's like it is fully ingrained into the story, for better or worse.
I was really surprised, because I went into this movie totally clean. I didn't see any trailers.
Yeah.
I think I caught a couple of still images, but, you know, against my will. And I'm glad, because I went back and after the movie and watched the trailers, and they give away so many of the big plot points that were.
So you didn't see the trailer that actually spells out, oh, there's a I'm this guy from the multiverse.
No, I saw nothing.
Okay, that's interesting. And I think that was a very interesting marketing ploy there.
Yes, because people who don't know Mysterio don't know who he is, and that he's a fraud. Right.
Even if you do know Mysterio, you're like, wait a minute. And especially after Into the Spider-Verse.
Sure, could be.
It's like, oh, they're actually going to expand this whole multiverse thing into the MCU proper. Like, that's kind of crazy. But they're really setting you up for,
yeah,
you know, the same trick that Peter falls for.
Not to go on a tangent with the trailers, but yeah, like, they gave away that. They gave away MJ figuring out Spider-Man. They gave
that
away.
That one was crazy to me. I was like, why would you give that away in a trailer?
And they gave away
that's a big moment.
Happy and May's secret romance, which I thought was a fun reveal. Like, I was really surprised.
I didn't remember that from the trailers. But
what the first trailer opens up with that whole conversation where Peter's looking back and forth between the two of them.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I just blocked that out, but yeah. I thought that was great. I love that choice.
But to get back to the film, I was really surprised at how rooted it was as the epilogue of Avengers, in that, you know, Tony is a major presence throughout the whole film. And
yes, very much so.
One of the themes is, will Peter become the new Tony Stark? And clearly,
right,
by the end, he is. But mm-hmm. on his way to being the next Tony Stark, not now.
In a really great, another great Happy moment.
Yeah, I thought that was great. And
when it's like sort of unspoken, when Happy is just watching him do the moving the stuff around, the all the what's it called,
the 3D hologram
Minority Report.
Yeah.
Reminds me of,
yeah,
like when he's moving the stuff around, building the suit in like AR or virtual reality, whatever. And Happy has that like sort of twinkle in his eye, like, oh yeah, I remember this.
Anyway, I thought that was really interesting how ingrained. Iron Man was, and even flashbacks to previous films where we inserted Jake Gyllenhaal into Stark, and so we saw more of Robert Downey Jr. in flashbacks, and that was a really interesting surprise to me.
And along that front, the return of Ralphie from A Christmas Story, as one of the Stark, and he was in the original Iron Man. Like, they didn't, you know, shoehorn him in like they did with Jake Gyllenhaal, although it feels natural.
Yeah,
with all those characters, but yeah, that guy is John Billingsley, I think, is the actor's name.
Peter
Billingsley, right? He was in the original Iron Man and had that argument with Obadiah Stane,
right?
And now they've brought him back for this, and that it just makes it feel like, wow, look at what they've built over these 10 years.
It's really crazy.
Yeah.
Well, the film opens with a very strange cold open before the credits, in which Nick Fury and Maria Hill are in Mexico, and there's an elemental there, and then Mysterio shows up to save the day, and it cuts very oddly, and then it goes to the crew.
Yeah.
It was very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
I get why they did it as a way to set up the relationship between S.H.I.E.L.D., or not S.H.I.E.L.D., and Mysterio, but still, it was a very strange scene.
Are they like Nick Fury's Howling Commandos now, or what?
I guess it's sort of Black Ops in the S.H.I.E.L.D. team.
Yeah, I'm very confused by like what S.H.I.E.L.D. is now.
How does he fund it? Like, I don't know how any of that works.
Because like it's also like sort of the FBI, like in Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's weird. There's a lot of crossover. It's strange to me, but anyways.
Yeah, so in Venice, it was the water elemental, basically Hydro Man.
Yes.
Attacks, and Peter, he has his suit because May packed it against his will. He didn't want to bring a suit on vacation and has to save the day there. And then that's when he gets pulled into the whole intrigue with Nick Fury and Mysterio, who tells everyone he is a soldier from another multiverse where the elementals killed his Earth, and he's come to...
Yeah, his Earth was destroyed, his family, and
make
and all
a
that
last
stuff.
Stand. It was interesting watching it, you know, knowing Mysterio's character, and thinking, how is he doing all this?
Like, yeah.
How is this happening?
So you were from the get, even though you hadn't seen like trailers and stuff, but you knew that obviously that Mysterio was going to be in it.
I knew Mysterio was in it, yeah. But the thing is, Mysterio is what he is.
Right. So you knew he wasn't on the up and up.
For sure. And first of all, we knew he was the villain, but also,
right,
that's his thing. He comes in, he creates elaborate illusions, and in the comics, I think he's a special effects guy.
Right.
So the whole time I was thinking, man, how is he doing all this? It's really hard to fake this giant battle in the middle of Venice with buildings getting broken. But
it's like they're putting a lot of weight on like hard light technology.
But the explanation worked, made sense in the comic.
Yeah.
In the context of the world they created.
And also fit in with previously explained technology. Like the Edith stuff with the drones like was already in place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though it's like at this point, like Tony can create all this crazy tech. Like, you just believe that you're bought in at this point.
It all makes sense.
But in the world. I like that in the movie, they establish that there are drones that can do this stuff, and you just have to add the hologram aspect to it. And like, oh, okay, that's how it works. That's how they're doing this.
Yep. And so in the midst of Peter being constantly getting pulled into this fight against the fake elementals, he's also planning on making his feelings known to MJ while she's also being courted by Brad, who was one of the returning blip people who came back super hot. And then, of course, one of my favorite little subplots is Ned and Betty falling in love on the flight to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew right away they would break up on the flight back.
Right. It's like it's very tropey. It's like that particular subplot is very emblematic of sort of how there's some cliches and some like high school like hijinks movie tropes in this movie, but they're so fun that you kind of, you know, I at least am able to forgive it. I've seen this before. It's very predictable, but I like these characters so much, and
oh, for sure,
it works.
And the way they completely became that annoying couple, like right off the bat, was funny. And it's, you know, Ned is not your typical high school romantic lead in this kind of scenario. So it was nice to see that happen with Betty, who was your sort of typical pretty blonde character. So it was nice to see that wasn't even an issue.
I like that they're kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, like they're making some fairly dumb choices a lot of the time. Also, if you kind of buy into the dorkiness of this movie and just engage with it, and also think of it as this movie being through the lens of the very naive young Peter Parker, I think it works more. That helped me with the way Nick Fury is depicted, because it's very broad.
Well, let's get to that in a minute, because that's
ignoring the scroll stuff. Even before the scroll stuff, I was like, man, like Nick is, it's like very caricature of Nick Fury.
Well, okay, let's get into that, because that was the only, watching the film, the only real problem I had was, I was like, they're really writing Nick Fury strange. He's like kind of not out of character, but you're right. It's like sort of like
it's like back to square one.
A drawing of Nick Fury as opposed to Nick Fury, yeah. You know? But then it's revealed that he's actually the Skrulls from the Captain Marvel movie, and the real Nick Fury is actually off in space doing something with the Skrulls.
But like when they wrote this movie, did they know they were going to do that? I can't tell.
They had to, because there's just a couple of very strange lines, and there's a conversation in the middle about the Kree that we walk in on between Fury and Maria Hill, a quote Fury and Maria Hill. I mean, it was clearly meant to be that the entire time, because he was not, everyone else was written really well, and he was written as like someone who thinks this is how Nick Fury talks. Sort of bad, like the part where Mysterio defeats the Hydro Man elemental, and then he says the first thing Fury says, well, we must always remain vigilant. You might as well have his hands on his hips. And
yeah,
that was the first sign I had that something was really strange with Nick Fury. So it's
like he should be chomping on a cigar, and it's very, I don't know. It's almost a caricature of, and you find out that it is. It's Talos's version of Nick Fury.
And I thought that was great, because then it basically undercut my only real criticism of the film. So that became a benefit of it.
I'm looking forward to seeing this movie again and watching it with that lens.
Yeah. I only have one other real problem, and that's just a very specific thing to me. We'll talk about that at the end when we talk about
the
mid-credits sequence.
Okay.
So there's the Aunt May happy romantic subplot. There's the Peter, Brad, MJ subplot. There's a lot of romance going on this trip. There's Ned and Betty, all while they're running around through Europe, and they ended up getting diverted to higher class accommodations by Nick Fury's unlimited funding team. They get sent to Prague, and then instead of going to Paris, they go to London, because that's where Mysterio wants to stage his big world shaking event that will cause him to join the Avengers. And his motivation was a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wanted the world to listen to him. I think that's what it seemed to be.
Yeah, he wanted recognition, and he also the key thing to it was I spent years working on this hologram technology, and then through a flashback to Civil War, right?
Mm-hmm.
We see Tony using it, you know, for like his therapy session, like to go back and visit his parents. And he calls it BARF as an acronym.
Right.
And it's just like, you've made my life's work a punchline.
Right.
And so that's interesting, because like Tony Stark looms huge over this whole movie. I love the idea that like Peter, although he loves and has a lot of respect for Tony Stark, at this point, and especially as like a young man who's like trying to find himself as a high schooler, he feels under the he feels burdened by this whole thing of being the next Tony Stark, or living up to being the next Tony Stark and being an Avenger. Whereas in the previous movie, all he wanted was to be an Avenger. And so now he's running to Europe to get away from it just for a little while.
He saw how terrible or hard it is to be an Avenger. In the Avengers.
Sure, and that's totally believable. And I love the fact that he sees like murals of Iron Man
everywhere,
all over the world, no matter where he goes. So there's that reminder. And then we're also reminded not just of his heroics, but of all his foibles and this whole team. And I love that it's a team. It's not just Mysterio by himself.
Yeah.
It's not just Quentin Beck by himself. He's got this whole crew. They're all angry and feel kind of,
they were all misunderstood.
Forgotten.
Yeah, not misunderstood, but they were all sort of unappreciated at Stark
underappreciated. Industries.
I like the story guy writing dialogue on the fly. That was funny. It was just kind of real smart the way they had that team put together. I guess my only thing was, what did Mysterio think would happen once he joined the Avengers? He would be immediately exposed for not being a superhero. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't actually have any superpower, so jig would have been up.
Villains can have like an interesting, like relatable motivation, but they don't necessarily have like the full thing plotted out.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of improvisation going on, like with the guy writing on the fly. So like he's just playing it by ear. And I'm sure that his ultimate plan wasn't, you know, what he ends up doing in the end, as revealed in the mid-credit sequence. That's not plan A.
Yeah, no, that was just sort of the last that ditch thing, definitely. I love spending time with these characters. I love the Peter and MJ romance. I think Zendaya is terrific. I think she's a really naturalistic actress. They're great together. I like that she's a little bit taller than him.
Yeah.
I like that she's very layered. She has that hard outer shell, but with Peter, she lets it down.
I had a moment of a little bit of heartbreak when Peter thought, oh, you've just been looking at me because, you know, you thought I was Spider-Man and you were trying to figure it out. And like momentarily I was like, oh, that's totally possible. Yep. And like, that's a very Spider-Man that's a very Peter Parker thing. Like, this has been going far too well. And like, it's almost been too easy, you know, for her to fall for him or whatever, or, you know, him to get the girl. And,
well, especially since she's not the traditional MJ. She could, you know, it's not like your redheaded Irish MJ from the comics that we all know. It's a different version, so therefore anything can happen with her. She could just have been looking at him because he was Spider-Man.
Yeah, you could totally buy that being the thing. I'm like, oh, man, yeah, maybe you've been, like, thinking too little of MJ, that she's just the love interest. Right. Like, it could totally be that she's, like, you know, it's more of the Tim Drake thing. She's, like, the detective. She's figured it out. And so that I had this little pang of like, oh, because I really bought into the possibility of their relationship.
Right.
And of course, you know, I was right that it's sort of too good to be true, because mid-credit sequence,
which
sort of throws everything into chaos. But
I also like the little team at the end when the final battles in London, and they and Happy and the kids who he rescues, which is MJ and Ned and Flash and Betty, get trapped in the Crown Jewels and the Tower of London. And I like that MJ had a weapon, you know, and Betty was the one who grabbed the, not spear, but whatever that was called.
That reminds me that I had the dorkiest moment in the theater. It was Happy says, like, give me the spear. And then Ned says, that's a halberd. I said it out loud at the same time because I was like, that's a halberd. That's not a spear.
So I think that was fun. I mean, I like Betty a lot. So it was interesting that she didn't get, because she was in it as much as anybody else.
Oh yeah,
she didn't get a special end credit. You know, like all the main characters had their own little end credit card, and she was the only one that didn't get it. I was a little surprised by that. But
she had such a fun, like, small role in Homecoming.
Yeah,
I love the, like, having been one of the AV kids in high school and doing the morning news show. I love the hell out of that. That opening sequence with the Whitney Houston's cover of I Will Always Love You,
yep,
over the, I was like, this is a little flip for, like, a tribute to those three Avengers that died for, like, Peter to have made this.
Yep.
Because I was like, what is this at first? Like, okay, somebody built this video in, like, you know, like Final Cut or whatever. And it's obviously a kid did it. So I'm thinking, like, Peter. And then when they reveal that it's, like, the high school AV team, and there's the one picture with, like, a Getty Images watermark on it. I laughed so loud.
All the terrible transitions.
And the shot of Vision is, like, believably, like, this, like, snapshot that someone took, like, you know,
super
meters away from the airport, like, when they were in Berlin. It just looked like terrible quality. But then, of course, you have, like, all these shots from Wired of Tony Stark, so you can get those. I love that stuff.
The thing about this film, and it was true for Homecoming as well, is that, like, it's such a good high school film.
Yes.
You remove the superhero elements. It was almost a point where, like, when Mysterio showed up in Venice, I was a little bummed for a second because I just wanted to keep following them around in Venice.
Yeah.
Because that's why I think the movie works so well, because the Spider-Man elements and the Nick Fury elements and the Mysterio elements are really good. And then also you have really good teen romance elements. So it actually works on a lot of levels.
And both of these Spider-Man movies are, like, two of the best showcases of what it's like to live in the MCU.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And just be, like, a person and, like, see how things are perceived by normal people.
Right.
So I think that's really interesting. So this is a really... It's sort of like really good placement to put this after Endgame to show how people are coming back from this. And it's also, like, tonally so different. It's such a breath of fresh air. So even though it's really complicated, and there's a lot of there heavy stuff does happen mid credit sequence. It's so lighthearted.
Well, it's extremely funny.
That. Yeah, it's very funny. You need that after Endgame.
Yeah, cause at first I was like, oh wow, I don't know how I feel about them so directly, you know, examining Endgame and its impact. But then,
right.
But they did it so well that I was okay with it being an epilogue.
I also think it's so weird that like so the wider world knows that Steve Rogers is presumably died between these movies.
Well, I guess they're just telling people he died because are they going to tell people that he went back in time and lived his life in the 40s? You know, like
I didn't think that, but you raise a good point. We don't necessarily know that.
I think it's easier for the Avengers to say, yeah, these three died in the battle with Thanos.
So he could still theoretically be alive.
Old man Steve. He didn't slump over on that bench at the end of the
match. Effectively.
I assume he's somewhere.
I wondered, are we ever going to see that moment or get a flashback in a future film to that moment?
I guess it depends how much money they offer Chris Evans. It would make the most sense to them just to say these, because you know, in a way, he did die. He did not come back from that battle. At first, I was like, "Whoa!" I was like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense." He's basically for all intents and
purposes. Yeah, he's effectively, out of the picture.
I had so much fun seeing this, talking about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. Immediately afterwards, I want to watch it again. It was just different because I didn't feel that way about Avengers at all.
Mm. After Endgame, you didn't.
I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was, as we talked about the show. I wasn't on the show.
No, I wasn't on it either.
I enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was great.
Okay.
And I don't really feel the need to watch it again.
I was very impressed by it. It's very messy. I feel like I've been watching Ant-Man and the Wasp a lot because mm-hmm. that's like just a very fun, watchable movie. So like that's my thing. If like I just need something on in the background, sure. I put that mm-hmm. on. Endgame is so heavy. And
yeah,
I have such complicated feelings about how what happened with some of the characters that I don't want to relive that necessarily.
My metaphor that I've been using when people have asked me about Avengers Endgame is that I think Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame are very much like Captain America Winter Soldier and Captain America Civil War. Like I enjoyed Civil War. I've seen it one more time since the theater. I don't really ever feel like the need to watch it again. Whereas I watch Winter Soldier, you know, at least once a year. I think Infinity War is a much better made film. Endgame had a lot of great moments and scenes, mm-hmm. but it was overall like kind of a mess. Unsatisfying.
Impressive mess.
Oh, impressive. It was definitely impressive.
Just when you pick it apart and like go like look what they did. Like look what they were able to do.
Yeah.
And that it's not a total train wreck, you know. I'm not even saying it's a small train wreck, but like that it's not a total train wreck is kind of a miracle.
Yeah, I just found it very
unmemorable
at the end of it. I don't know. That's not really important. The point is, mm-hmm. I came out the opposite way feeling. I will definitely be watching this again and again.
Mm-hmm. Can I share the crazy rumors I heard about this movie before seeing it?
Sure.
So I saw this somewhere. I don't remember where. But someone said, because they introduced in that trailer, that second trailer, that there's the multiverse element,
mm-hmm.
which we find out to be a fiction, which I presumed would be the case.
Yeah,
I was like, they're not actually doing that. That's Mysterio fucking around. Like, that's not that he's.
I love that he got people that even know better. That's how good Mysterio is.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So I was like that, that's a really clever thing. So I was like, okay, that's. So when I was sure that's what was going on, which is when they introduced that scene in the movie, I was like, oh, they just totally threw this away.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no incredulity to there being a multiverse. They're just like, okay, roll with it. I was like, that's when I knew that he made this up.
Right.
I heard a rumor. Someone said that, oh, the multiverse part and this, there's that whole, you knew going in, there was going to be a lot of emphasis on Iron Man having died.
Yeah.
There's like, oh, in third act, we're going to see Tony Stark from another reality.
Hmm.
That's going to give Peter closure or something.
Right.
And then the other rumor was that the third act would involve Tom Holland teaming up with Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man from other realities to stop Mysterio.
Oh, you got to love people's ideas.
But it's like, you know what? When they have a deal with Sony, and it's a cooperative kind of project. It was like, you can't rule it out. Like, yeah, that sounds crazy, but after Into the Spider-Verse, it almost seems possible. And they weren't entirely far off, because we did see the return of a Raimi-verse Spider-Man character.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So the mid-credit sequence, well, the end-credit sequence was the reveal that that Nick Fury and Maria Hill were Skrulls. They were Telos.
Telos and his wife?
Yeah, I think so. That was funny. I love Telos. Love seeing him again.
Yeah.
And then, so then we see that real Nick Fury is actually in a spaceship having a Mai Tai or something from a fake screen showing the ocean, and he seems to be commanding a ship full of Skrulls or something. Who knows what the fuck that is?
Yeah.
Because they mentioned the Kree earlier. I know the Kree were the bad guys in Captain Marvel, but it feels like a Kree Skrull Wars kind of situation. Who knows? I guess we'll find out.
My friend Preethi, who wrote the tie-in book to the middle grade tie-in book to this movie, Peter Ned's European Vacation Diary. I'm probably getting that title wrong, but that's basically what it is. And it's a fun book. She suggested that, this is basically a get-out-of-jail-free card if they ever need it. Like, just saying, like, if there's something in one of the previous movies that they need to retcon, they can say, oh, that was a Skrull.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's the beauty of the Skrulls.
But other than that, I don't know what they're building here.
And they haven't announced anything for the next wave of rumor and speculation, so who knows what it means. So the mid-credits sequence. So the movie ends with Peter taking MJ for a swing around Manhattan, which was really fun and cute.
Yeah.
So they come to an end from the swing. She says she never wants to do it again. It's all adorable. And they're in front of, I think, Madison Square Garden. And very casually leaving her on the street, and no one seems to care or bother them.
Right, yeah.
So then the breaking news report happens on the giant TV outside of Madison Square Garden, which there are giant screens. They don't have sound on them, though. But it's Pat Keener from New York One, my favorite New York anchor.
That's a real anchor?
Yeah, he's the New York One anchor. He's a New York folk hero.
Okay.
He's in a lot of TV shows and movies because people in New York love him. He's an affable Canadian. Anyway, so then there's a report from the whole fracas in London because everyone still thinks Mysterio was a superhero who helped save the day from all these elementals.
Right.
And so I guess in his dying moments, because he, of course, gets shot and dies at the end, claims that Spider-Man killed him, and he edits some footage that makes it sound like Peter was controlling the drones, which I remember at the time when he said the line the way he said it, I was like, well, that's a weird way to say it.
Well, yeah, execute them. Like, it's like Edith says, do you want to execute the protocol or something like that? Yes. And he's like, execute him. Yeah.
So he uses that to say that Peter was the one using the drones to attack people. And then
because he wants to be the new Tony Stark, he doesn't want anyone else to have that claim to fame.
And so then everyone starts looking at Spider-Man strangely. And then Mysterio says, Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And then, but then.
Right. This is all framed by the fact that this video was obtained by the Daily Bugle.
The DailyBugle.com. Which is sort of positioned as like an Alex Jones-esque website.
InfoWars,
Alex Jones-esque scenario. And we have J.K. Simmons returning as J. Jonah Jameson, who says, I've got this video from Mysterio, and he frames it as Spider-Man being a menace and all this stuff. I don't know if I like framing Jonah Jameson as an InfoWars-esque character.
And I think they do a fake-out because during part where when Peter's on his way to pick up MJ and he's swinging around town.
Yes.
He does that thing where he like runs across the side of a building and you look inside and it's like, it seems like a newsroom.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, are they going to, is that going to be the Daily Bugle? But no, it's that they pull the rug right out from under you in this very consequential end credit sequence.
And very important, both of them. Yeah, I thought the same thing when he ran across the windows of the office. It would be the Daily Bugle. Because, the Daily Bugle has appeared in the Spider-Man films. It's never appeared in the other Marvel things because it was a Sony property. In Daredevil, it was like the Daily Bulletin or something, whatever it was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if I like how they're framing Jonah, because even though he's an asshole, he's not evil.
Right.
But then I also, and this is a very minor thing, I hated the way he looked without the flat top.
Yeah.
With J.K. Simmons' bald head and the mustache.
Yeah, it was a weird look.
I thought he looked strange. He didn't look like Jonah.
Yeah.
And I get that's a minor thing, but he looked so perfectly like Jonah when he played him in the Raimi films.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, bring him back. But now you make him look different, so now in my head I'm like, why does he look different?
It's a bummer. Like a totally, and is a different person, because...
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I don't buy that Jonah from the Raimi films being...
No, they're just using the same actor.
Diabolically evil and a sociopath.
Yeah, it's a different version. I just don't know if I'm ready for like a... you know, that
like,
kind
I don't,
of
I don't see J. Jonah Jameson as a you know, Sandy Hook truther.
Yeah, so that's the only misstep I've got in the film.
It's weird, and I knew that that was going to be really controversial. I was like, oh, that's the way they present the Bugle in the video game, the recent Spider-Man PS4 game,
mm-hmm.
as it being more of an InfoWars-style thing. And I know a lot of people did not like that. And I think you make the point that, yeah, it's like it's not as nuanced as the bitter relationship that they have, you know, historically in the comics and then the movies. We'll see how it goes. It could also, so we may never see that character again.
I feel like, unless they never make another Spider-Man movie, because it feels like a fairly consequential twist at the end, and if you never see him again, it would be strange.
They are definitely making another
I know.
Spider-Man movie.
But if this is the last one, then fine. But like, they're gonna definitely make another one, and then since that's the cliffhanger, that has to be the story next, is that Peter's been revealed, and also everyone thinks he's a bad guy.
And even MJ is like, whoa, which is, and I just sort of, not to, because we can go way down a rabbit hole in this, but like, there's a lot of really relevant, scary stuff in this movie, like the sort of the post-truth world kind of stuff. There's some very relevant jabs at the current status quo in the real world.
Well, it's also, that's a theme in the film too, is what is truth?
Yeah. It's very much a thing. So having that ending, I think, is very, like, it pained me because I love the happy ending.
Yes.
I loved it. And then it was like, so I was actually like, I felt kind of sick. Like, I was like, I felt like Peter probably did. I was like, oh God. And like, but also because that stuff of like doctored video and stuff is very scary. Like, I think back to the Star Trek, The Next Generation episode where they fake a video with Spock in it.
Right.
When he's Ambassador Spock, and it was like, that's the stuff that they're like doing now, where they're like faking, you know, like they take like in like video of Obama and they like make it look like he's saying something else that could trick people. And I was like, that stuff is like legit terrifying to think, if you know,
that stuff is more terrifying than supervillains, because the supervillains are not real, never will be. But yeah, no, I had the same sort of anxiety feeling afterwards, because it's like, oh God, how. Oh no! Not now!
Yeah,
don't do this to Peter.
Everything was so good. Why did you? Which
is great.
I think it. So, but like which is great. Like, yeah, you want that, and it also is very appropriate to Spider-Man. That is absolutely a Spider-Man ending. And then, in addition to those very heavy sort of discussions of things that are happening now, there's some lighthearted stuff. Like, it can't just be me who, when Mysterio was in London getting ready, and he had the other woman that he was working with steaming his cape.
Yeah. I mean, that was great.
I was like, are they doing a Hope Picks thing here? And then like, they went back to it and I was like, oh, they're definitely going there.
But also we should mention, I thought Jake Gyllenhaal was terrific. We haven't talked about him at all.
We'd be remiss if we didn't, because
he is great. He was moments away from becoming Spider-Man in Spider-Man 2, the previous best Spider-Man film.
Yep.
I have to rethink all my Spider-Man rankings after these two.
It was like Tobey Maguire got injured in Seabiscuit.
Yes.
I remember this being on like Ain't Cool News or something. And they're like, Gyllenhaal might be the new Spider-Man. And I was like, I could kind of maybe see, I don't know. But he's not as dorky as Tobey Maguire. But like, yeah, so he plays this character that you totally could buy Peter befriending, especially this very naive Peter Parker.
He's charming and funny and nice.
Very vulnerable Peter Parker. Yes. Yeah.
When Peter comes around him and fake Fury's being mean to him, he's the only one being like, hey,
yeah,
you're smart. You're a good kid. You did good. Like, he's actually reinforcing all the things Peter doesn't get from anybody.
Yeah.
Even taking him to a bar and talking to him about his girl problems. Like, it's like he's like Peter's ultimate older brother, best friend type character, which he uses that to get what he needs from Peter. But that's why you buy it, because he is utterly charming.
You know, so even though they didn't trick me like they did with the Vulture. I mean, it's a very different twist.
They've gotten two. I mean, even though I knew Mysterio was bad, it apparently fooled enough people. That's two films in a row. They did a really good job of sort of pulling the rug out from.
But even if you're like a longtime fan, you're like, what is going on here? And like, what is the end game? And like you said, how is he doing this?
Right.
Is really good. And at the end, I was sort of, it was interesting because Ralphie from A Christmas Story gets that. He downloads stuff and takes it off the laptop. And I was like, I wonder why they included that, like him getting away. I was like, is he going to carry on being Mysterio. Like,
that's what I thought until the mid-credit sequence, obviously.
And then you, like, forget about it, and you're watching the movie, and then you're like, oh.
Yeah, I thought they were setting him up as, like, some, or the possibility of him being, you know, another villain down the road. But yeah, it's actually way worse than that.
Yeah,
because he could punch Ralphie in the face, no problem. It's public opinion being turned on you is a whole other thing.
But so far, I think the MCU is like 2 for 2 in terms of great use, inventive use of the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery.
Yes.
Scorpion's in there too, but, like, you know, he's like a tertiary character at this point. So that remains to be seen if they do anything with that. But really great uses of Mysterio and Vulture.
Right.
Who a lot of people consider like C-list.
No way.
Villains.
Not true Spider-Man fans.
I know. Mysterio's always been one of my favorites, but
all the originals are the best. That's what Raimi knew. That's what Raimi understood.
Yeah.
My final point would be the mid-credit sequence was all the more, I think, impactful when you think about how the film starts with Peter as, like, the toast of the town, basically, at that benefit for May's shelter, where everyone wants a picture with him, and the funny interview scene, like, everyone loves him, which is very non-Spider-Man-y. And so then by the end of this, we get the, the 180-degree Spider-Man menace scenario. So it's just...
That's how you get there.
It, like, breaks your heart.
Not your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man anymore.
Right.
And that's what he wants to be. Yeah, so, I think like, a little bit shaky in spots, but I was so just endeared to these characters and just the whole setup of the trip to Europe. And, like, I kind of, even though it gets broad sometimes, I really loved it when it did. Like, when he almost killed this guy Brad with a drone from outer space. Like,
it was funny.
It was just like, it was like wacky hijinks Spider-Man.
Which is good. This is the energy I was looking for when they brought him in as a younger character. Like, he's a totally different vibe than the rest of the movies.
You get a certain thing from the Spider-Man movies, you get a certain thing from the Ant-Man movies, and then Avengers movies are a completely different thing.
Right.
And so there's something for everybody. And I love that at this point, the ranking lists of favorite MCU movies is so different across the board.
Yeah.
Like, I can never guess what somebody's top five is even at this point. Like, it used to be, okay, well, Winter Soldier's going to be on there. You know, Guardians is probably up there.
Yep.
But now it's like, it's, you know, anybody's guess. So it's like, it's very subjective now. And that's great.
It is great. There's something for everyone. A comedy tonight. So let's rate this movie. Paul's favorite part of the show, where we rate the film on a scale of 1 to 5.
1 to 5.
It's, I'm on a little bit of a high from it, so I don't want to give it a 5.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking I'm going to have to go 4.75.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go 3.75.
Interesting.
I think it's a lot of fun, but I think I was frustrated with some of the, like, Iron Man 2 kind of stuff, where, like, this has to carry the weight. I think it does a better job of it, but it has to carry a lot of, like, connective tissue between movies. And, like, after Homecoming, I really wanted a Spider-Man movie that was, like, just like Spider-Man, where he just got to be Spider-Man.
Sure.
And we didn't have to deal with, you know, the, like, the Iron Man stuff, and this, like, doubles up
from
Homecoming.
Sure.
So even though I liked it, I still, you know, have this hope for, like, 3, that it's more back to basic Spider-Man.
Well, I think probably since you're dealing with him and his reputation, I think he's always going to be tied in only because they've set him up as this, you know, the heir of Stark Industries character. So I think it'll always be there, but you would think from the way they are setting up with the in-credit sequence, it's going to be, you know, a much more self-contained. How does Peter fight misinformation as opposed to a bad guy? I mean, I'm sure there will be a bad guy.
I can't wait to see what happens next for Mr. Harrington is the real takeaway. I want more Martin Starr.
He should get his own film.
He's fantastic. He's the Phil Coulson. Now, actually, I was thinking that about Happy. Like, Happy is the new Phil Coulson of the MCU movies. Like, he's that great continuity between all the movies, and he's like the heart.
That's true. I'm just hope that after revealing Peter's identity, that the newfound fame that comes to Jonah, he realizes he needs a toupee, and he puts on a... a flat top wig, because it's not Jonah without a flat top. If you think about it, the biggest assholes in the Marvel universe have flat tops.
All those clicks from, you know, posting that video and like everything he's getting from like the crazy horse pills that he's selling on his website, he can cash in for a flat top.
It's going to really bug me if he doesn't have one.
We've gone this entire podcast without saying Peter Tingle. And
that was funny. That's,
I think that's disappointing.
Did he lose that in the blip? Is that what happened?
I don't know.
They didn't really explain that.
It was like they almost, the way they framed it was almost like a confidence thing. Like,
yeah,
I lost my Peter Tingle, and like now I got it back because I believed in myself. The Peter Tingle is like having the Force, because you can go blindfold into a thing and just like,
that's true,
kick ass and go through bullets and stuff. Anyways,
it's a fun time at the super fun movie. Go see it. It's a, it's mostly, I mean, it's fun for all ages almost. There might be some swears, but it's still pretty. Pretty family friendly. It's a great Spider-Man. This is now my favorite live action Spider-Man.
Oh, wait. This movie or this Spider-Man?
This iteration of Spider-Man.
Okay.
Between these two movies and his appearances in other films, I think they just nail Peter Parker with this.
I think so too. I think Tom Holland is just like, and I love that they finally have the youth of Spider-Man is like a very big part of it. And but I also love this as just like the fullness of Spider-Man. Like, I like that those Raimi movies exist.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to erase them from my memory.
No.
You know, and I even had fun with the Andrew Garfield ones. But, like, I think this is
such
an inventive use of everything. And even though he came so late to the MCU, he's perfectly at home there. And they've done very smart things with it. And it doesn't feel like a retread.
Mm-hmm.
So, there we go.
All right, so go to fanboy.com. There'll be a post for this show if you want to talk about Spider-Man, your feelings in the film. Paul and I will be back with Ryan Haupt doing our animated review series. The latest will be Batman Hush sometime in August, and so you can check that out. And the next actual big league film...
I was wondering about that. What is next?
...is I just moved all my files around, and now I don't know where they are anymore.
Wonder Woman?
Oh, the next one is Joker in October.
Oh, right.
And then Star Wars in December.
Man.
Yeah. So
good times.
Still some fun content coming away. So check that out along with our weekly Pick the Week podcast. We talk about the week's comics. That was fun, Paul. That was fun.
That was fun. Also, the Mysterio special effects, not just the attacks, but like the nightmare sequence.
Yep.
Really good.
Yes.
Like that is a great realization of how scary Mysterio can be.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you get hit by a train.
All right. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.